For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back.
Way back, 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 way back, way back.
Oh my goodness.
Back, 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 back.
With more Hit and Run, Sunday mornings from 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score.
So here we go. Shota Imanaga, the 30-year-old lefty. A swing and a miss. And Gonzalez has gone on strikes. That's a half dozen punch outs for Shota.
Are you surprised at all that we've gone this far and nobody's been able to figure out Shota?
I mean, I think you have to say it, because when you start like looking at the historic, you know, stuff that he's doing, you look at the history of the game, and when you start getting in this territory, you have to be a little surprised for sure. But we're fortunate to watch it. It's been so much fun to watch.
0-2. Here comes Imanaga, the strikeout. He's fired up. 7 shutout for Shota.
ERA is fading to 0.84 is where Shota Imanaga is.
Welcome back into Hit and Run. I am Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel, who will be doing pre and post for the Cubs and fifth inning of play-by-play out at Wrigley Field today. Cubs and Pirates, again, 12:45. The first pitch will be thrown at 1:20 out on the north side of Chicago, and we are open at 312-644-6767. Pete Crow Armstrong will join us in about 25 minutes from right now. That will be 10:30, and we're talking about where you think the Cubs are going to be in, let's say, July. We're in May right now, and it's been a really nice start, 26-21, a patch start where there's been so many moving parts in terms of injuries. And the how many mental breaks has this team had so far this year? I mean, you've had Ian Happ with a mental break, Adbert Alzolay with a mental break, Kyle Hendricks has had a mental break, Dansby Swanson, is he hurt? I don't know. So like these
Nico Hoerner as well now.
Yeah, Nico Hoerner too. But it looks like you watch him on the edge of the dugout, he's always ready to go. And it will be nice to see the, like I said, I think that Mastroboni and Madrigal have been pretty good at short and second. It's just every time I see a ball hit to either of them, it just doesn't look right. And, you know, Mastroboni had that one poor play yesterday where he was slow to get to the ball and the Pirates base runner beat it out, a routine play, which does, as Boog Shambi said, does not go down as an error because the official scorer cannot call an error when for somebody moving slowly. That's essentially what was going on with Miles Mastroboni at shortstop. But he's been fine at that spot. I do think, and I've been saying this for a while, I do think the Cubs are going to blast off once July hits, or maybe it'll take them, you know, August, like the 2015 Cubs. And I don't look at this team like the 2015 Cubs. I actually compare this more, the way this season has gone for the Cubs, I compare it more to the 2007 Chicago Cubs. That was the Lou Piniella's first year, and the Cubs were middling all season long, trying to get things sorted out. Lou Piniella didn't quite have everything the way he wanted it, and then they finally hit a stride, ended up winning the division, but not by much. And they didn't really, I think, what, 10 games over 500? And, of course, they get swept by Arizona in the postseason. But the next year, under Lou, they ended up just taking off and one of the best teams in baseball that year. And then, of course, they were swept by the Los Angeles Dodgers. But those were those days. And these are these days right now. But I do think that once you get, because, I mean, the best of the Cubs, like Justin Steele is the number one guy that I look at and say, that will normalize. That he will get back to where he was, or at least some form of it eventually, despite what has happened with him in his last start, where just he didn't look good. You know, gave up 5 runs on 6 hits, struck out 7, walked a couple of guys. It was not a good performance for him. And I also didn't like the way Justin Steele looked flustered every time a ball carried in the outfield, as if he had never seen that before at Wrigley Field. On the Oliveras home run, he was even shaking his head on the Nick Gonzalez HR too as well. Or actually, not Oliveras, I should say. Yeah, it was just Nick Gonzalez who hit the home run. But there was a couple of deep fly balls that just carried and carried and carried, and he's shaking his head. And I get that if you're a visiting pitcher, or if you've not pitched at Wrigley Field for a year and a half, I understand that. So I just had never really seen that out of Steele, a flustered look. But I do think that he's going to get his act together. Cubs have to figure out who is going to get that ball every day in the ninth inning still. And I like the I'm thinking about Ben Brown. I'm thinking about Hayden Wesneski. I'm not thinking about Mark Leiter, I don't think, in that spot.
I think he's perfect exact where he is. Like, setup guy, you know, maybe lefties coming up here, perfectly for that kind of role.
Yeah, he was great yesterday. Struck out the side in the eighth inning. That was like, if you're into pitching, now, you know what? You don't even have to be into it. If you're just into competitive, close, 1-0 games, which I'm assuming you are, it felt like every last guy that was retired for both teams, and the pitching for the Pirates was absolutely excellent yesterday, too, with Bailey Falter and Colin Holderman. Every single last out, there was a pump of the fist, which was awesome. You had Mark Leiter striking out the side in the eighth, fist pump. Hector Neris, 2 strikeouts in the ninth. Big, big fist pump. And here's Craig Counsell right here on, what's that? What do you got over there, Sears?
This is Craig Counsell talking about Mark Leiter and Hector Neris being shut down yesterday.
Yeah, both with, you know, really solid 1-2-3 innings for sure. And that, you know, I thought we were in a good spot when we got, when Mark threw a scoreless inning, just we had Hector and we still had Ben Brown left in the pen, and I think thought that put us in a really good position to just have good solid innings. But those two guys did a wonderful job. 1-2-3 innings.
He's thinking the same way you were. So it sounds like if Neris had faltered there, Ben Brown was the guy he was going to there to shut that door.
You threw me off when you said being shut down. But he said that in my ear. I'm like, wait a minute, did I miss something? They're shutting down Mark. Are they getting their mental breaks?
You're right. The terminology, this team, the history, it was fair to go there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So if I sounded a little bit awkward and flustered right there, that's because he was talking about a shutdown.
I'm just trying to tell you these little producer secrets here as they come through. That's all they are.
No, I appreciate it. I do, but
password is
you alarmed me just a little bit. We can't have. Well, I guess everybody gets a mental break on the Cubs. So if things start to go poorly for either Leiter or heart attack Hector, then there's going to be a problem. By the way, Hector Neris apparently yesterday after the game gave some sort of inspiring talk to the clubhouse afterwards. And yeah, I'm not sure, really sure. We don't really have details on what was said during that, but I guess like he gave some sort of stirring conversation then. Maybe this is the launching point. And maybe he was just saying, stop calling me heart attack Hector. Do you see what I just did right there? I got 2 strikeouts. I don't exactly appreciate you calling me heart attack Hector. So maybe that's what was going down with him in there. But yeah, those two guys have been absolutely terrific. But I want to know what you guys think. If the Cubs are going to be blasting off in July, and if it's not Shota Imanaga, who has been your MVP of the Cubs so far this year? 312-644-6767. Let's go to Jack in Wilmette. Hello, Jack. You are on Hit and Run on the Score.
Hey, Mark. How you doing? You know, you're the only one I would ask this question of, because you're the only one that said Justin Fields wasn't doing well in practice 6 months ago. And people just didn't even listen to you.
Of course, yeah.
Here's my question. Craig Counsell, he has made horrible decisions since the beginning of the season in his pitching staff. When he was with Milwaukee, he had four guys that went seven innings, one guy, and he got the Hader. Now, before he had a bad bullpen, he let Hendricks give up 8-9 runs in 3 of 4 innings early in the season, and the Cubs came back in those games, scored 7, 8, 9 runs, and blew the game because he let Hendricks go too far. Then he has a reliever who gives up 3 blown saves, brings him in for 2 more, and then brings him in the 8th inning of a 1-0 game, and he blows that, okay? So how smart is this guy?
Well, Jack, and I will say this. He has been trying to figure out his guys. Can't deny that. I mean, Hendricks' first start, I remember him getting hit around, and then I think it was the 6th inning, 3rd time through the lineup, Craig Counsell puts Hendricks back out there. He gets crushed, had to take him out in the inning. And I was saying it then. Of course, Craig Counsell kept him in too long. But I think that there were reasons for it, and that is because of the injuries that have existed for the Cubs. He was already taxing the bullpen a bit, and there is the part. And, Jack, I got to tell you, I mean, like, you do have to give Craig Counsell a little bit of time to learn these guys, and it's early. So it's okay to take risks sometimes and find out what your guys are capable of. I remember Javier Assad earlier this year had back-to-back starts where Craig Counsell put him back in, again, in the 6th inning. And both times, Assad gave up big runs in the game. So I was, at that point, I was like, okay, maybe stop doing that. Maybe the next one, now you're learning. You're pushing these guys to the point where maybe they're staying in too long. And I promise you, like, Craig Counsell is like a lot of managers. Remember Joe Maddon wouldn't really have his team figured out, even going back to Tampa Bay, until the middle of the summer. And then you'd see the reel. Then you'd know that you can't leave Jason. If Jason Hamill starts giving up a bunch of hits and runs, and if it's the 2nd inning, take his ass out. So I think Craig Counsell is sitting back and watching. There's that part. And then there's all of the injuries as well. And you're right. Like, the Alzolay thing was, and I said it at the time, and I think maybe this is where Craig Counsell was thinking too. Is this really else? Has he really crumbled this far? Is he really not able to save games anymore? And that's based on what he did last year. And look, he wasn't the best closer in the world last year, but he was pretty good. So I think that some of these guys, he gave the benefit of the doubt. I promise you that he will figure things out a lot better with his pitchers and his bullpen. He's going to make mistakes still, but I think there's a learning curve. And again, it goes back to my comp of Lou Piniella back in 2007, where he was trying to figure things out and really didn't get the blast off until the end of the season. And then that team just, it did that. It took off that year and then the next year as well, where they were, again, I think maybe the best team in baseball during that particular season. So it's a good call. It's a good question, Jack. And trust me, everything will be picked apart that Craig Counsell is doing throughout this season. But as of right now, I still got my arms kind of folded here, and I'm kind of like with a skeptical eye. Okay, I see you, Craig Counsell. I see what's going on. So wait till he has a full deck of cards and he figures out his guys. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Bob in Arlington Heights. What's up, Bob? You're on the Score.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Long-time caller. I was just saying to Sean, you know, I said, I don't want to sound like Dennis Green, but, you know, they are who we thought they were, except I'm beginning to have doubts. On April 30, on March 31st, I said, hey, they're going to win 90 games this year.
Okay.
Couple days into the season, I said, okay, I'll soften that optimism. And I'll say, I know this for sure. They're going to win more games this year than the Sox are going to lose. Now I'm not even sure of that. But my point was, when I was talking to Sean, you got a major problem with sunk costs in your corner outfielders. These guys are supposed to be your big numbers guys, and they're not. And I don't think either of them are exactly defensive luminaries. And, you know, yeah, they make an occasional spectacular play. But, you know, I've seen Suzuki, you know, balls in the corner. He doesn't catch them. He goes and gets them.
Well, you also had, and thanks for the call, Bob. I always appreciate hearing from you. Say Suzuki also straight up missed a ball, hit right at him. And I think we all wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt on that one, Sean. But they're like, okay, the sun was out, but no, the ball was hit low. Did he look away? No. I mean, he just missed it.
And it's so frustrating because he made that great running catch in the fourth, too. And
he made a nice catch yesterday as well.
And then this play just happens. She's like, man, did he just like, was he like looking at the sun and then the ball flew by? Like, I don't know.
He has not shown that outfield is his strength.
Right field is really tough, too. So I get it. But at the same time, too, when he's shown you make a couple great plays and then you got a gaff like that.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a phone number. Here you go. It's Andre Dawson. He knew how to play. Andre Dawson. Somebody said, can you do a Harry Carey? Mark, give us a Harry Carey, Barry Rosner. Barry Rosner, whatever happened to that guy? He's probably out there golfing somewhere. Barry Rosner, Budweiser. But Seiya Suzuki, just go look at the film from Andre Dawson. Sammy Sosa. Sammy had a hell of an arm. I'll say that. He was fine. He was fine.
He was solid out there.
Yeah. That's the word. He was absolutely solid. And Ian Happ obviously has been a gold glover as well. But to your point, Happ has struggled big time this season. And he always hits one of these periods, it feels like, during a season where it gets really rough for him and then he starts to figure things out. I mean, I always think back to 2019 when he got sent back down to the minors and he was not pleased about that at all. But then he came back up and he was really good. So I don't know. Maybe he needs another break because he has had one hit since he hit that home run in the Thursday game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. 312-644-6767 is the number. 630 Cubs MVP this year, hard to not say Imanaga, but would be a disservice not to give Javier Assad a vote. Yeah, I mean, it's the same scenario. Like, are we going to keep seeing this from Javier Assad? Is he going to continue to be brilliant throughout the rest of this year? I mean, there'll be some struggling, but if you have found something, and obviously in Shota Imanaga, and him as well, then you're in really good shape for the year. I don't know if they're going to bring in help for the closer situation. If Hector Neris is the guy, there's just a point of, you know, that he just makes you completely nervous when he is out there as well. So, and I don't know. Well, are we going to see? Where is Alzolay right now? I don't know where Edward Alzolay is, but I imagine that he gets put back in or he gets one more try at this, but I don't even know where he is right now.
I know I believe he's on the IL currently, but I think he's with the Cubs. I know, Council said, he's one of those guys that's just going to have to figure it out. I think he's going to be a part of the bullpen solution or problem either way.
Yeah. Well, back to Shota. I want to play this thing for you. This was yesterday on the Marquee Sports Network, as everybody tries to find comps for Shota Imanaga, they trying to dig deep to tell you exactly what he is doing, why he is so effective out there. This was a great report from Taylor McGregor of the Marquee Sports Network, followed up by Jim Deshaies on Shota Imanaga.
On the mound, MLB's ERA leader. Talking to other hitters who have opposed Imanaga, there's a couple things that stand out as to what's generated so much swing and miss and kept hitters off balance. It's been described as this, an invisible fastball. So a lot of hitters feel like you can kind of read the fastball out of his hand, but then by the time it gets to you, you're not able to make contact and it just goes right past you. But then the other thing that feels like the reason a lot of hitters have been kept off balance is that pause in his delivery. So we have a video of what I'm talking about. When he goes to release it, there's that slight pause, and that's what's been really tough to time up the fastball. Again, a lot of swing and miss has been generated, and just not a lot of production has been had against that fastball.
On the ground, and Madrigal takes it in.
Reynolds is out, and there's one away. And you can see how the pause and the carry on the fastball work together to make it just a tiny bit harder for the hitter. I mean, it's about timing.
It's like a pump fake in basketball. A hitter stands in there, and he gets just a certain physical cues when he's looking out at the pitcher. The leg comes up. I get ready. I'm going to load mode. I'm ready. And now all of a sudden, he kind of hesitates at the top there, and that gets you out of your rhythm a little bit.
I love that. I wonder, though, and it seems simple. I'm wondering why it's so hard for major league batters to adjust to that. They know what's coming. They've obviously, I think that they've watched video on him. So I just hope that is not an adjustable thing. But for now, love it. Love the report. Love that he's got that little bit of deception, and I hope it continues to be deceiving. From the 630, Lou over Joe Maddon all day in capital letters. Me or you win a World Series steering with that 16 team. And you got to give, except for Game 7, you got to give Joe Maddon lots of props, not just for 2016, but for what he did in 2015. Man, nobody thought that they were going to do what they did in 2015, getting all the way to the NLCS and then getting blasted by the mighty Mets that year. I mean, that's for sure. I will say this, too. I was thinking about Joe Maddon yesterday because one thing the Cubs are not great at that I've noticed, they don't. You ready for this, Sean? They don't seem to respect 90 all the time. You know, respect 90? The Wisdom pop-up yesterday? Wisdom hits that pop-up that is in shallow, like just on the fringe of the outfield and right field, and he's lollygagging around first base, and he gets thrown out at second because he didn't sprint out of the box.
Yeah, you know who would have turned that into a double? Chris DiNorfia.
Yeah, exactly. And then you had Belly. Bellinger pops out, and he carries the bat all the way to first base. I'm like, come on, you got to respect 90 a little bit more. I'll tell you one guy who respects 90 that I know, because I had a really fun time watching our next guest run from home plate to third base the other day. That triple E hit. Oh, yeah. Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA, is going to join us next here on Hit and Run. I'm Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel on The Score.
He's a freak. He's the fastest kid alive.
This is not good.
He's the fastest kid alive.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Pete Crow Armstrong, a top prospect in the Cubs organization. Hard hit ball to deep left center. Armstrong on the run, back toward the wall. Leaping, he makes a great catch. What a play by Armstrong. Banged into the center field fence.
I don't think I really need to say a word. You can't take a better route. You can't be quicker than him to get there.
That one sliced out of the left center field. That'll touch down for a hit. Watch PCA run. There he goes around second. He's on his way to third. Pete Crow Armstrong in with a triple.
There's a drive to right center, and that's a gapper, and that's going to be trouble. No! A great catch by Pete Crow Armstrong. He came out of nowhere.
A right-hander, Abreu.
Oh! Crow Armstrong hits one in the air. Deep right field. This is going to go. It's gone. Major league hit for Pete Crow Armstrong is a bomb to right, and the Cubs take the lead. That's a wow.
It's Hit and Run on The Score. I am Mark Grody filling in for Matt Spiegel today. We'll talk to Spiegs at 11:25 live from Wrigley Field, where he is digging in, getting ready, preparing for Cubs pregame at 12:45. Cubs and Pirates with the final game of this entertaining series out at Wrigley Field. 1:20 is when that will go down. Pete Crow Armstrong, the 19th overall pick of the Mets in 2020, and then in 2021, the Cubs acquired the speedy center fielder from the New York Metropolitans at the deadline for Javier Baez, and we are thrilled to have PCA joining us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Pete Crow Armstrong, what's going on, man?
How you doing, Mark?
I am doing well. I got to ask you first about the finish to yesterday's game. The 1-0 win, Morrell with a solid shot into center field, and then Cody Bellinger chugging around third base to score the game-winning run.
Yeah. yeah, chugging is right. no. no, that was a great at-bat. On both of those guys' ends. I mean, Cody had a beautiful piece of hit in there. That double that we all saw, that was, I mean, from a baseball perspective, that's about as good as it gets with two strikes. And then same with Mo. I mean, Mo put together a few good at-bats yesterday. And, you know, I think that walk-off is a product of what he did previously throughout the game. And it's a walk-off at Wrigley's it's pretty cool. And yeah, I mean, they set that place on fire yesterday and they got the job done, man. That was really, really good, you know, hitting by both of them.
Did you guys give Belly some crap about his speed around third base? I mean, I think we both agree.
No, I have not yet. I bet you I'll get to it at some point, though.
Can't all go from home to third base as fast as you. I'm going to get into that here in just a little bit. It was funny, man, yesterday that you know, the play at the plate, and it's a bang-bang play. It looks to me like, in real time and even on the replay, that Bellinger may have gotten in there, but when you see the ball squirt out like that, it's a huge relief. But did you see that Bellinger's arm, and I think it was incidental and not on purpose, his arm actually hit the ball out of the catcher's mitt, and the Pirates broadcast, we listened to it a little bit earlier, they were irate over that. Did you notice that Belly hit that ball out of the catcher's hand?
Yeah, and it wasn't in his glove. The ball, I don't think dislodged is the right word, but when his glove hand and his throwing hand separated, the ball came with the throwing hand, and Cody was just finishing his slide. You didn't see him do anything extra with his hand or anything like that. If anything, we're taught to slide with our hands up. So, you know, I think that was just a perfect storm of things to happen, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he did do it on purpose, which I don't think he did, but if he had, I would say that's pretty shrewd, man. I'd say that's like Javier Baez stuff.
I mean, if he did it on purpose, it was a pretty good sell job and it was a pretty good acting job to make it look like he didn't do it on purpose, because it all looked like one motion to me, man. I didn't see any shrewd stuff there at all.
Yeah, you're probably right. Talking to Pete Crow, Armstrong, Cubs outfielder. I'm Mark Grody here on Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. What do you think of Shota Imanaga yesterday and what he has put together so far this year?
I mean, yesterday was just was just another little taste of I feel like what we've been seeing for the last few weeks, or I mean that I've been seeing for the last few weeks, and what the rest of these guys have been seeing all year. He's so impressive. He's so impressive. I don't get to see a lot of the behind the scenes stuff in between any of these conversations that he has, but I know there's always stuff in the works with him, and he's just such a pleasure to be around. I got to talk a little bit about it last week. Just the energy that he brings, you know, the confidence he brings into the room and onto the mound with him. You know, it was funny, you know, you didn't see his best stuff in Atlanta, I guess.
Right.
But what a quick turnaround, you know. He didn't miss a step. He hasn't missed a step all year. And when it wasn't his A-plus stuff in Atlanta, you got his A-plus stuff yesterday. And I'm sure there's even better to come from him, because he's definitely special.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. And nobody can really figure it out. Other teams can't figure him out, and we can't figure out if this is going to last. But I'm just absolutely enjoying it. We were told that after you guys won yesterday and all the elation on the field, but then you guys go into the clubhouse and Hector Neris, who had a hell of an inning too yesterday with a couple of strikeouts in the ninth to keep the 1-0 game intact. We heard that Hector Neris gave some sort of a speech in the clubhouse. Can you let us in on a little bit of what Hector Neris said if you were a part of that?
I wasn't actually a part of that. That was probably something I missed, seeing family up on the field, but that doesn't surprise me that he was somebody to do that. You know, he's loud in all the good ways. You know, he's a character, and again, in the best way. Like, that guy comes to the ballpark every day the same. energetic. He seems happy, you know. And he's a pro, you know. He's done this for a long time and at a very high level. And I'm not surprised that you know he's starting to or continuing to show his leadership qualities. He's a great dude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad there was no heart attacks yesterday. Heart attack Hector, just 2 strikeouts, clean inning. Mark Leiter Jr. was terrific as well in that game. PCA, I want to talk a little bit about you. By the way, is it okay if I call you PCA? I mean, I'm just now meeting you. Is PCA cool?
Yeah, that's all good.
Just wanted to make sure. What is your comfort level like right now relative to when you came up last year?
It's different for sure. It's evolved or improved or whatever you want to call it. I think I've just gained more awareness for creating a good routine and everything kind of behind the scenes that you know is supposed to set you up for success as best as you can on the field. And I've had a lot of help and guidance with that, and I've said it a bunch, but you know, just the continued strengthening of these relationships that I kind of got to start last year. I think I'd probably contribute that the most to whatever gained comfort or peace that I feel here. You know, I don't get here alone. You know, I don't hit that homer without conversations with Dansby and Nico and Ian and Talkman and my hitting coaches and whoever it was that I spoke to and whoever added to my, you know, expanding knowledge of big league baseball. Because I think when I came up here, you know, I was a different player. I was a different person. And definitely just feels nice to feel like I know the ropes a little bit better the second time around.
I'm glad that you mentioned Mike Talkman, you know, the saying that he's one of the guys that you've worked with. Because I've always said, like, if I had a child, I would say Mike Talkman is the guy that should teach you baseball. It just seems like his, number one, his approach at the plate, where it's always like a 2-2 count or full count. And then the fact that I think maybe all of his home runs have been opposite field. He's just a steady presence in the outfield as well. Has Talkman been the most important guy to you in terms of a teammate?
I mean, I don't think most important is the right way to word it. I think, I don't think it's a game of most or least. I think it's all about who, you know, and if we're going to talk about who, Talk's a great guy to kind of watch. And, you know, I got a little bit of Talk and a little bit of Cody back-to-back spring trainings now, and those are 2 kind of different personalities and whatnot, but both guys who really know the game and know how to play the game of baseball and produce for their team, clearly, because, you know, those are 2 guys, two of the best bats I've been around, and you know, it doesn't even need to be verbal. It's been nice hitting ninth because I get to watch really good left-handed hitters hit in front of me. So, not about most important. I haven't quite thought of it like that at all. And I would just say that whatever I can take from anybody, man, that's about as simple as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, that's important, and I think the veterans appreciate that as well because, you know, you can learn a lot from your manager and your hitting coaches and position coaches and all that, but invaluable from some of those veterans. I think one of my favorite games that I watched you play this year was last Wednesday in Atlanta. That was an important win, too, because you guys had lost the first two games in Atlanta. Obviously, the Braves are excellent. You win that game 7-1, but that's the game where you had the triple. I think you were hit by a pitch with the bases loaded, and the one highlight – I don't think we played it coming in, but it was that push bunt RBI that you, I think it was in that game. Correct me if I'm wrong, but was that all you? Was that just like what made you decide to do that? What were the circumstances that you said, you know what, I'm going to bunt this thing for a base hit and not get a run?
That's all situational. That's all circumstantial. So I just kind of read the field and, the bunt aspect of my game is something that's been needing some work, and I haven't been quite successful with it this year, or as successful as I'd want to be. And I was just happy to get that one down and be able to execute. I think it's important to take advantage of the bunt game with runners in scoring position, and doesn't really matter the outs. I think if the game gives you the freedom to bunt, you need to take it, especially if you can run. And left on left, it's nice because the field opens up, or the right side opens up a little bit more. And I was just able to place one nicely. And, it was nice to drive in a run doing that as well. That was just a good feeling again to be able to execute situationally.
What's a better feeling, that or flying around the bases in that triple you had where we all got to see the full Pete Crow Armstrong speed on display?
The push bunt for sure. Running the third base is tiring sometimes, but I'd have to say that push bunt. I think also the getting to third base was important there, so I think turning the double into the triple was probably the most rewarding thing of that, just because, Jan executed perfectly and drove me in right after that. So I think we might have let a run up in the half inning before that, and getting that run back was definitely nice in the later innings. But I think generally being able to take one with you against the lefties is fun.
Talking to Pete Crow Armstrong, I'm Mark Grody here on Hit and Run, filling in for Matt Spiegel today. In the Friday game against, that was the Paul Skeens game, the rookie who ended up striking out 11, you were for a moment there, you're kind of a mini hero, because there was seven straight strikeouts before you finally made contact in that game. What were you guys seeing from Skeens, and what were your impressions of him for the second time now? We have to ask you this question.
Paul Skeens is a baseball specimen, physical specimen. The big boy throws a heavy ball and was doing a really good job of locating and mixing and showing us a bit better of a version of him, of himself, than I think we got the first time. I think he'd probably tell you the same thing. I think he probably had some nerves in his first outing and it being his debut and it being at home. But, I think he was just that much better yesterday than he was last time. We were just seeing A stuff from Paul Skeens. So, as tough it is to face sometimes, you can kind of look back at it now and appreciate I love baseball, and I think I can appreciate how cool that was to be able to compete against him, because, that's what we all signed up for, it's funny that 97 is becoming the norm now, but that's what I go to sleep wanting to do and waking up wanting to do. And him specifically, I've gotten to kind of follow his progress since we were 12, and I told him he's definitely a little bit bigger than he was back then, but I think all in all, now that I don't have to face him for a little bit, I'll give him the credit in saying that he was real good. So that we definitely tip our cap to that, but we're looking forward to facing him another time, you know.
Oh,
so,
yeah, you guys are gonna.
I'm sure there will be many.
Many opportunities to get to Paul Skeens. Hopefully that will be the case for everybody involved. Last couple things here, man, because I know you got to get going. But how would you assess your outfield? I know in that game you had that. I was like, man, this guy's got a strong arm, but it did go over the catcher's head at one point that allowed a run. But we've seen many spectacular plays, too, in the outfield. How do you assess your defensive play so far this year?
You know, I think it's been a small sample size. I think our pitchers have been really good, and I haven't actually gotten all that much action out there.
It's a good thing, right?
I think that's the most ideal situation ever. You know, I think when you got guys that we got on the mound, and you go out there, you know, kind of hoping they just feel comfortable enough to do what they need to do on the mound, and whatever that means to them. And if that results in us having to make plays, that's what we're here to do, and that's what I'm here to do. I live for that shit. So, you know, I'm as much as I want to go run and chase balls down, I also have I have to be okay with Javi Assad going six shutty and Shota going seven shutty and whatever. Like, because it's honestly very fun for me to watch from the center field angle too. But no, I mean, I've made some plays I haven't, and you know that throw the other day was definitely frustrating, and that's one I got to live with. But it's one that I'm going to fix, and you know, I think again, small sample size, but it'll only get better, and I'm sure it'll only be worse sometimes because that's just baseball. But I'm going and looking to make plays regardless.
You having fun with the fans at Wrigley Field in those bleachers when you go out there?
Absolutely. I love saying hi to everybody when we get to go out for the first inning. And I love hearing the little chatter behind me and whatnot and interacting a little bit. But it's funny who you'll run into in the bleachers. So, our bleacher friends back there have been great to me so far.
Pete, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck today against the Pirates, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you much. Sounds good.
Absolutely. That's Pete Crow Armstrong, Cubs outfielder, former top prospect, and yeah, he's figuring it all out, man. You could see the tools on display. Like I talked about that game last week. He is imperfect, but that's what it's all about. He is a rookie and a very promising one. At that. Still to come on Hit and Run, we'll go live to Wrigley Field and bring in Matt Spiegel at 11:25, Paul Sullivan at noon. I'm Mark Grody in for Spiegel on Hit and Run on the Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 the Score.
Hope you guys are doing great. Welcome back into Hit and Run on the Score. I'm Mark Grody. Top text, 229. Where's Speegs? Speegs? Speegs will be on Hit and Run just a little bit later on. He's out of Wrigley Field. I assume he's probably interviewing a player right now to be aired on the pregame show at 12:45. And then Speegs will be doing some play-by-play in the fifth inning. But he will give us a scene setter coming up at 11:25 from the friendly confines of the north side of our fine city. Sean Sears, bring me Ben in Queen. Is that where he's from?
Queens, New York.
Oh, he's from Queens. I just
Queens,
see...
New York City, Grody.
Oh, Benny,
how's
boy,
it going?
I'm very sorry about that. I didn't know. I just saw Queen. That's the way he put it down there.
Forget about it. Hey, listen.
Sorry. Yes, yes.
I saw the PCA right here in Queens in Citi Field. You know, Citi Field, the center field goes out to 408, covers a lot of ground. He is a Excelsior outfielder, and he made a bunch of plays. If you went back and listened to the Mets broadcast, I went to see the first three games, and they were really well-pitched games. If you remember, that was the no-no with Seve against Tyone, who was pitching great, and then Assad did great, and then Alzolay did bad, and then the Shota game. But anyway, he's already got three outs above average. He doesn't even qualify. If he qualified, he'd be in the 90th percentile of outfielders. On the other hand, dovetailing with what Bob in Arlington Heights said about sunken costs in your corner outfielder, Ian Happ, I'm sick of people calling him a Gold Glover. I know he won two Gold Gloves. The second one he won on reputation only. Last year he was 84 and 92 at -7 outs above average. He made 0 of 23 five-star plays. This year he is 81 of 104 outfielders. A couple of weeks ago he was 101 out of 104. Okay, he's made 1 5-star play, no 4-star plays, 1 3-star plays. This guy is blocking PCA, Canario, Casey with his no-trade clause. Ian Happ's contract looks worse every day. And from the right hand, right-handed this year, he's got a 72 weighted runs created plus with an OBP of 270. He doesn't get on base as a right-handed hitter. Canario's only got one minor league option left. If he has to come up for some bereavement leave or somebody gets sick or something like that, and then they're wondering what they have to do, and he gets crunched because Ian Happ's sunken costs are coming down on the team, there's going to be a problem. Other than that, take the Cubs. I took them at +185. They're going to win. They're the best team in the division. Shota Imanaga is not only a Cy Young candidate, but if he keeps like this, he's an MVP candidate. He's like what Kershaw in 2014.
I got you, Ben. Hey, Ben, I'm sorry. I'm right. It's almost the top of the hour, so I got to let you go. But I do appreciate the call from Queens, and I saw that game too. Hey, one thing you can say, I kind of agree with you on Happ. Like, I didn't see spectacular outfield play last year. He's been steady. I was a little surprised he did get the Gold Glove. But, hey, that's a win if you're getting it on reputation. That means that Ian Happ has built up some credibility in Major League Baseball, and I get what you are saying. He is struggling in all sorts of different ways right now. So, and trust me, you know, this is a year in which the Cubs are expected to win. The division is there for the taking. So once you get through May and into June and then July when things are real, if these guys are not performing, they will not be playing. I'm Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We're back.
Way back, 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 way back, way back,
oh my goodness.
back.
With more Hit and Run, Sunday mornings from 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score.
So here we go. Shota Imanaga, the 30-year-old lefty. A swing and a miss. And Gonzalez has gone on strikes. That's a half dozen punch outs for Shota.
Are you surprised at all that we've gone this far and nobody's been able to figure out Shota?
I mean, I think you have to say it because when you start like looking at the historic, you know, stuff that he's doing, you look at the history of the game, and when you start getting in this territory, you have to be a little surprised for sure. But we're fortunate to watch it. It's been so much fun to watch.
0-2. Here comes Imanaga. with a strikeout. He's fired up. 7 shutout for Shota.
His ERA is fading to 0.84 is where Shota Imanaga is.
Welcome back into Hit and Run. I am Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel, who will be doing pre and post for the Cubs and fifth inning of play-by-play out at Wrigley Field today. Cubs and Pirates, again, 12:45. The first pitch will be thrown at 1:20 out on the north side of Chicago. And we are open at 312-644-6767. Pete Crow Armstrong will join us in about 25 minutes from right now. That will be 10:30. And we're talking about where you think the Cubs are going to be in, let's say, July. We're in May right now, and it's been a really nice start, 26-21, a patch start where there's been so many moving parts in terms of injuries. And the how many mental breaks has this team had so far this year? I mean, you've had Ian Happ with a mental break, Adbert Alzolay with a mental break, Kyle Hendricks has had a mental break. Dansby Swanson? Is he hurt? I don't know. So, like these.
Nico Horner as well now.
Yeah, Nico Horner too, but it looks like you watch him on the edge of the dugout, he's always ready to go. And it will be nice to see the. Like I said, I think that Mastroboni and Madrigal have been pretty good at short and second. It's just every time I see a ball hit to either of them, it just doesn't look right. And, you know, Mastroboni had that one poor play yesterday where he was slow to get to the ball and the Pirates base runner beat it out, a routine play, which does, as Boog Shambi said, does not go down as an error because the official scorer cannot call an error when for somebody moving slowly. That's essentially what was going on with Miles Mastroboni at shortstop. But he's been fine at that spot. I do think, and I've been saying this for a while, I do think the Cubs are going to blast off once July hits, or maybe it'll take them, you know, August, like the 2015 Cubs. And I don't look at this team like the 2015 Cubs. I actually compare this more, the way this season has gone for the Cubs, I compare it more to the 2007 Chicago Cubs. That was the Lou Piniella's first year, and the Cubs were middling all season long, trying to get things sorted out. Lou Piniella didn't quite have everything the way he wanted it, and then they finally hit a stride, ended up winning the division, but not by much. And they didn't really, I think it was 10 games over 500, and of course they get swept by Arizona in the postseason. But the next year under Lou, they ended up just taking off and one of the best teams in baseball that year. And then, of course, they were swept by the Los Angeles Dodgers, but those were those days, and these are these days right now. But I do think that once you get, because, I mean, the best of the Cubs, like Justin Steele is the number one guy that I look at and say, that will normalize. He will get back to where he was, or at least some form of it eventually, despite what has happened with him in his last start, where just he didn't look good. You know, gave up 5 runs on 6 hits, struck out 7, walked a couple of guys. It was not a good performance for him. And I also didn't like the way Justin Steele looked flustered every time a ball carried in the outfield, as if he had never seen that before at Wrigley Field. On the Oliveras home run, he was even shaking his head on the Nick Gonzalez HR too as well. Or actually, not Oliveras, I should say. Yeah, it was just Nick Gonzalez who hit the home run. But there was a couple of deep fly balls that just carried and carried and carried, and he's shaking his head. And I get that if you're a visiting pitcher or if you've not pitched at Wrigley Field for a year and a half, I understand that. So I just had never really seen that out of Steele, a flustered look. But I do think that he's going to get his act together. Cubs have to figure out who is going to get that ball every day in the ninth inning still. And I like the I'm thinking about Ben Brown. I'm thinking about Hayden Wesneski. I'm not thinking about Mark Leiter, I don't think, in that spot.
I think he's perfect exact where he is. Like, setup guy, you know, maybe lefties coming up here, perfectly for that kind of role.
Yeah, he was great yesterday. Struck out the side in the eighth inning. That was like, if you're into pitching, now, you know what? You don't even have to be into it. If you're just into competitive, close, 1-0 games, which I'm assuming you are, it felt like every last guy that was retired for both teams, and the pitching for the Pirates was absolutely excellent yesterday, too, with Bailey Falter and Colin Holderman. Every single last out, there was a pump of the fist, which was awesome. You had Mark Leiter striking out the side in the eighth, fist pump. Hector Neris, two strikeouts in the ninth. Big, big fist pump. And here's Craig Counsell right here on, what's that? What do you got over there, Sears?
This is Craig Counsell talking about Mark Leiter and Hector Neris being shut down yesterday.
Yeah, both with, you know, really solid 1-2-3 innings for sure. And that, you know, I thought we were in a good spot when we got, when Mark threw a scoreless inning, just we had Hector and we still had Ben Brown left in the pen. And then I thought that put us in a really good position to just have good solid innings. But those two guys did a wonderful job. 1-2-3 innings.
He's thinking the same way you were. So it sounds like if Neris had faltered there, Ben Brown was the guy he was going to there when he shut that door.
You threw me off when you said being shut down. But he said that in my ear. I'm like, wait a minute, did I miss something? They're shutting down Mark. Are they getting their mental breaks?
You're right. The terminology, this team, the history, it was fair to go there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So if I sounded a little bit awkward and flustered right there, that's because he was talking about a shutdown.
I'm just trying to tell you these little producer secrets here as they come through. That's all they are.
No, I appreciate it. I do, but
password is
you alarmed me just a little bit. We can't have. Well, I guess everybody gets a mental break on the Cubs. So if things start to go poorly for either Leiter or heart attack Hector, then there's going to be a problem. By the way, Hector Neris apparently yesterday after the game gave some sort of inspiring talk to the clubhouse afterwards. And yeah, I'm not sure, really sure. We don't really have details on what was said during that, but I guess like he gave some sort of stirring conversation then. Maybe this is the launching point. And maybe he was just saying, stop calling me heart attack Hector. Do you see what I just did right there? I got two strikeouts. I don't exactly appreciate you calling me heart attack Hector. So maybe that's what was going down with him in there. But yeah, those two guys have been absolutely terrific. But I want to know what you guys think. If the Cubs are going to be blasting off in July, and if it's not Shota Imanaga, who has been your MVP of the Cubs so far this year? 312-644-6767. Let's go to Jack in Wilmette. Hello, Jack. You are on Hit and Run on the Score.
Hey, Mark. How you doing? You know, you're the only one I would ask this question of, because you're the only one that said Justin Fields wasn't doing well in practice 6 months ago. And people just didn't even listen to you.
Of course, yeah.
Here's my question. Craig Counsell, he has made horrible decisions since the beginning of the season in his pitching staff. When he was with Milwaukee, he had four guys that went seven innings, one guy, and he got the Hader. Now, before he had a bad bullpen, he let Hendricks give up 8-9 runs in 3 of 4 innings early in the season, and the Cubs came back in those games, scored 7, 8, 9 runs, and blew the game because he let Hendricks go too far. Then he has a reliever who gives up 3 blown saves, brings him in for 2 more, and then brings him in the 8th inning of a 1-0 game, and he blows that. Okay, so how smart is this guy?
Well, Jack, and I will say this. He has been trying to figure out his guys. Can't deny that. I mean, Hendricks' first start, I remember him getting hit around, and then I think it was the 6th inning, 3rd time through the lineup, Craig Counsell puts Hendricks back out there. He gets crushed, had to take him out in the inning. And I was saying it then. Of course, Craig Counsell kept him in too long. But I think that there were reasons for it, and that is because of the injuries that have existed for the Cubs. He was already taxing the bullpen a bit, and there is the part. And, Jack, I got to tell you, I mean, like, you do have to give Craig Counsell a little bit of time to learn these guys, and it's early, so it's okay to take risks sometimes and find out what your guys are capable of. I remember Javier Assad earlier this year had back-to-back starts where Craig Counsell put him back in again in the sixth inning, and both times Assad gave up big runs in the game. So I was at that point, I was like, okay, maybe stop doing that. Maybe the next one. Now you're learning. You're pushing these guys to the point where maybe they're staying in too long. And I promise you, like, Craig Counsell is like a lot of managers. Remember Joe Maddon wouldn't really have his team figured out, even going back to Tampa Bay, until the middle of the summer. And then you'd see the reel. Then you'd know that you can't leave Jason. If Jason Hamill starts giving up a bunch of hits and runs, and if it's the second inning, take his ass out. So I think Craig Counsell is sitting back and watching. There's that part, and then there's all of the injuries as well. And you're right. Like, the Alzolay thing was, and I said it at the time, and I think maybe this is where Craig Counsell was thinking too. Is this really else? Has he really crumbled this far? Is he really not able to save games anymore? And that's based on what he did last year. And look, he wasn't the best closer in the world last year, but he was pretty good. So I think that some of these guys, he gave the benefit of the doubt. I promise you that he will figure things out a lot better with his pitchers and his bullpen. He's going to make mistakes still, but I think there's a learning curve. And again, it goes back to my comp of Lou Piniella back in 2007, where he was trying to figure things out and really didn't get the blast off until the end of the season. And then that team just, it did that. It took off that year and then the next year as well, where they were, again, I think maybe the best team in baseball during that particular season. So it's a good call. It's a good question, Jack. And trust me, everything will be picked apart that Craig Counsell is doing throughout this season. But as of right now, I still got my arms kind of folded here, and I'm kind of like with a skeptical eye. Okay, I see you, Craig Counsell. I see what's going on. So wait till he has a full deck of cards and he figures out his guys. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Bob in Arlington Heights. What's up, Bob? You're on the Score.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Long-time caller. I was just saying to Sean, you know, I said, I don't want to sound like Dennis Green, but, you know, they are who we thought they were, except I'm beginning to have doubts. On April 3rd, you know, on March 31st, I said, hey, they're going to win 90 games this year.
Okay.
Couple days into the season, I said, okay, I'll soften that optimism. And I'll say, I know this for sure. They're going to win more games this year than the Sox are going to lose. Now I'm not even sure of that. But my point was, when I was talking to Sean, you got a major problem with sunk costs in your corner outfielders. These guys are supposed to be your big numbers guys, and they're not. And I don't think either of them are exactly defensive luminaries. And, you know, yeah, they make an occasional spectacular play. But, you know, I've seen Suzuki, you know, balls in the corner. He doesn't catch them. He goes and gets them.
Well, you also had, and thanks for the call, Bob. I always appreciate hearing from you. Say Suzuki also straight up missed a ball, hit right at him. And I think we all wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt on that one, Sean, but they're like, okay, the sun was out, but no, the ball was hit low. Did he look away? No. I mean, he just missed it.
And it's so frustrating because he made that great run and catch in the fourth, too. And
he made a nice catch yesterday as well.
And then this play just happens. She's like, man, did he just, like, was he, like, looking at the sun and then the ball flew by? Like, I don't know.
He has not shown that outfield is his strength.
Right field is really tough, too. So I get it. But at the same time, too, when he's shown you make a couple great plays and then you got a gaff like that.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a phone number. Here you go. It's Andre Dawson. He knew how to play. Andre Dawson. Somebody said, can you do a Harry Carey? Mark, give us a Harry Carey Barry Rosner. Barry Rosner, whatever happened to that guy? He's probably out there golfing somewhere. Barry Rosner, Budweiser. But Seiya Suzuki, just go look at the film from Andre Dawson. Sammy Sosa. Sammy had a hell of an arm. I'll say that. He was fine.
He was solid out there.
Yeah. That's the word. He was absolutely solid. And Ian Happ obviously has been a gold glover as well. But to your point, Happ has struggled big time this season. And always hits one of these periods, it feels like, during a season where it gets really rough for him, and then he starts to figure things out. I mean, I always think back to 2019 when he got sent back down to the minors, and he was not pleased about that at all, but then he came back up and he was really good. So I don't know, maybe he needs another break, because he has had one hit since he hit that home run in the Thursday game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. 312-644-6767 is the number. 630, Cubs MVP this year. Hard to say, hard to not say Imanaga, but would be a disservice not to give Javier Assad a vote. Yeah, I mean, it's the same scenario. Like, are we going to keep seeing this from Javier Assad? Is he going to continue to be brilliant throughout the rest of this year? I mean, there'll be some struggling, but if you have found something, and obviously in Shota Imanaga and him as well, then you're in really good shape for the year. I still, like, I don't know if they're going to bring in help for the closer situation. If Hector Neris is the guy, there's just a point of, you know, that he just makes you completely nervous when he is out there as well. So, and I don't know. Well, are we going to see? Where is Alzolay right now? I don't know where Edward Alzolay is, but I imagine that he gets put back in, or he gets one more try at this, but I don't even know where he is right now.
I know he's, I believe he's on the IL currently, but I think he's with the Cubs. I know, like, I mean, Council said, like, he's one of those guys that's just going to have to figure it out. I think he's going to be a part of the bullpen solution or problem either way.
Yeah. Well, back to Shota. I want to play this thing for you. This was yesterday on the Marquee Sports Network, as everybody tries to find comps for Shota Imanaga. They trying to dig deep to tell you exactly what he is doing, why he is so effective out there. This was a great report from Taylor McGregor of the Marquee Sports Network, followed up by Jim Deshaies on Shota Imanaga.
On the mound, MLB's ERA leader. Talking to other hitters who have opposed Imanaga, there's a couple things that stand out as to what's generated so much swing and miss and kept hitters off balance. It's been described as this, an invisible fastball. So a lot of hitters feel like you can kind of read the fastball out of his hand, but then by the time it gets to you, you're not able to make contact and it just goes right past you. But then the other thing that feels like the reason a lot of hitters have been kept off balance is that pause in his delivery. So we have a video of what I'm talking about. When he goes to release it, there's that slight pause, and that's what's been really tough to time up the fastball. Again, a lot of swing and miss has been generated, and just not a lot of production has been had against that fastball.
On the ground, and Madrigal takes it in. Reynolds is out, and there's one away. And you can see how the pause and the carry on the fastball work together to make it just a tiny bit harder for the hitter. I mean, it's about timing.
It's like a pump fake in basketball. A hitter stands in there, and he gets just a certain physical cues when he's looking out at the pitcher. The leg comes up. I get ready. I'm going to load mode. I'm ready. And now all of a sudden, he kind of hesitates at the top there, and that gets you out of your rhythm a little bit.
I love that. I wonder, though, and it seems simple, I'm wondering why it's so hard for major league batters to adjust to that. They know what's coming. They've obviously, I think that they've watched video on him. So I just hope that that is not an adjustable thing. But for now, love it. Love the report. Love that he's got that little bit of deception, and I hope it continues to be deceiving. From the 630, Lou over Joe Maddon all day in capital letters. Me or you win a World Series steering with that 16 team. And you got to give, except for Game 7, you got to give Joe Maddon lots of props, not just for 2016, but for what he did in 2015. Man, nobody thought that they were going to do what they did in 2015, getting all the way to the NLCS and then getting blasted by the mighty Mets that year. I mean, that's for sure. I will say this too. I was thinking about Joe Maddon yesterday, because one thing the Cubs are not great at that I've noticed, they don't, you ready for this, Sean? They don't seem to respect 90 all the time. You know, respect 90? The wisdom pop-up yesterday Wisdom hits that pop-up that is in shallow, like just on the fringe of the outfield and right field, and he's lollygagging around first base, and he gets thrown out at second because he didn't sprint out of the box.
Yeah, you know who would have turned that into a double? Chris DiNorfia.
Yeah, exactly. And then you had Belly. Bellinger pops out and he carries the bat all the way to first base. I'm like, come on, you got to respect 90 a little bit more. I'll tell you one guy who respects 90 that I know, because I had a really fun time watching our next guest run from home plate to third base the other day. That triple he hit. Oh, yeah. Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA. Is going to join us next here on Hit and Run. I'm Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel on The Score.
He's a freak. He's the fastest kid alive.
This is not good.
He's the fastest kid alive.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Pete Crow Armstrong, a top prospect in the Cubs organization. Hard hit ball to deep left center. Armstrong on the run, back toward the wall. Leaping, he makes a great catch. What a play by Armstrong. Banged into the center field fence.
I don't think I really need to say a word. You can't take a better route. You can't be quicker than him to get there.
That one sliced out of the left center field. That'll touch down for a hit. Watch PCA run. There he goes around second. He's on his way to third. Pete Crow Armstrong in with a triple.
There's a drive to right center, and that's a gapper, and that's going to be trouble. No! A great catch by Pete Crow Armstrong. He came out of nowhere.
A right-hander, Bray.
Oh! Crow Armstrong hits one in the air! Deep right field! This is going to go! It's gone! The first major league hit for Pete Crow Armstrong is a bomb to right! And the Cubs take the lead. That's a wow.
It's Hit and Run on The Score. I am Mark Grody filling in for Matt Spiegel today. We'll talk to Spiegs at 11:25 live from Wrigley Field, where he is digging in, getting ready, preparing for Cubs pregame at 12:45. Cubs and Pirates with the final game of this entertaining series out at Wrigley Field. 1:20 is when that will go down. Pete Crow Armstrong, the 19th overall pick of the Mets in 2020, and then in 2021, the Cubs acquired the speedy center fielder from the New York Metropolitans at the deadline for Javier Baez, and we are thrilled to have PCA joining us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Pete Crow Armstrong, what's going on, man?
How you doing, Mark?
I am doing well. I got to ask you first about the finish to yesterday's game. The 1-0 win, Morel with a solid shot into center field, and then Cody Bellinger chugging around third base to score the game-winning run.
Yeah. yeah, chugging is right. no. no, that was a great at-bat. On both of those guys' ends. I mean, Cody had a beautiful piece of hit in there. That double that we all saw, that was, I mean, from a baseball perspective, that's about as good as it gets with two strikes. And then same with Mo. I mean, Mo put together a few good at-bats yesterday. And, you know, I think that walk-off is a product of what he did previously throughout the game. And it's a walk-off at Wrigley's is pretty cool. And yeah, I mean, they set that place on fire yesterday, and they got the job done, man. That was really, really good, you know, hitting by both of them.
Did you guys give Belly some crap about his speed around third base? I mean, I think we both agree.
No, I have not yet. I bet you I'll get to it at some point, though.
Can't all go from home to third base as fast as you. I'm going to get into that here in just a little bit. It was funny, man, yesterday that you know, the play at the plate, and it's a bang-bang play. It looks to me like, in real time, and even on the replay, that Bellinger may have gotten in there. But when you see the ball squirt out like that, it's a huge relief. But did you see that Bellinger's arm, and I think it was incidental and not on purpose, his arm actually hit the ball out of the catcher's mitt. And the Pirates broadcast, we listened to it a little bit earlier, they were irate over that. Did you notice that Belly hit that ball out of the catcher's hand?
Yeah, and it wasn't in his glove. The ball, I don't think dislodged is the right word, but when his glove hand and his throwing hand separated, the ball came with the throwing hand, and Cody was just finishing his slide. You didn't see him do anything extra with his hand or anything like that. If anything, we're taught to slide with our hands up. So, you know, I think that was just a perfect storm of things to happen, you know.
I'll tell you what, if he did do it on purpose, which I don't think he did, but if he had, I would say that's pretty shrewd, man. I'd say that's like Javier Baez stuff.
I mean, if he did it on purpose, it was a pretty good sell job, and it was a pretty good acting job to make it look like he didn't do it on purpose, because it all looked like one motion to me, man. I didn't see any shrewd stuff there at all.
Yeah, you're probably right. Talking to Pete Crow, Armstrong, Cubs outfielder. I'm Mark Grody here on Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. What do you think of Shota Imanaga yesterday and what he has put together so far this year?
I mean, yesterday was just was just another little taste of I feel like what we've been seeing for the last few weeks, that I've been seeing for the last few weeks, and what the rest of these guys have been seeing all year. He's so impressive. I don't get to see a lot of the behind the scenes stuff in between any of these conversations that he has, but I know there's always stuff in the works with him, he's just such a pleasure to be around. I got to talk a little bit about it last week. Just the energy that he brings, you know, the confidence he brings into the room and onto the mound with him. It was funny, you know, you didn't see his best stuff in Atlanta, I guess.
Right.
But what a quick turnaround, you know. He didn't miss a step. He hasn't missed a step all year. And when it wasn't his A-plus stuff in Atlanta, you got his A-plus stuff yesterday. And I'm sure there's even better to come from him, because he's definitely special.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. And nobody can really figure it out. Other teams can't figure him out, and we can't figure out if this is going to last. But I'm just absolutely enjoying it. We were told that after you guys won yesterday and all the elation on the field, but then you guys go into the clubhouse, and Hector Neris, who had a hell of an inning too yesterday with a couple of strikeouts in the ninth to keep the 1-0 game intact, we heard that Hector Neris gave some sort of a speech in the clubhouse. Can you let us in on a little bit of what Hector Neris said, if you were a part of that?
You know, I wasn't actually a part of that. That was probably something I missed, seeing family up on the field, but that doesn't surprise me that he was somebody to do that. You know, he's loud in all the good ways. You know, he's a character, and again, in the best way. Like, that guy comes to the ballpark every day the same. sorry, energetic. He seems happy, you know. And he's a pro, you know. He's done this for a long time and at a very high level. And I'm not surprised that you know he's starting to or continuing to show his leadership qualities. He's a great dude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad there was no heart attacks yesterday. Heart attack Hector, just two strikeouts, clean inning. Mark Leiter Jr. was terrific as well in that game. PCA, I want to talk a little bit about you. By the way, is it okay if I call you PCA? I mean, I'm just now meeting you. Is PCA cool?
Yeah, that's all good.
Just wanted to make sure. What is your comfort level like right now relative to when you came up last year?
It's different for sure. it's evolved or improved or whatever you want to call it. I think I've just gained more awareness for creating a good routine and everything kind of behind the scenes that you know is supposed to set you up for success as best as you can on the field. And I've had a lot of help and guidance with that, and I've said it a bunch, but you know, just the continued strengthening of these relationships that I kind of got to start last year. I think I'd probably contribute that the most to whatever gained comfort or peace that I feel here. You know, I don't get here alone. You know, I don't hit that homer without conversations with Dansby and Nico and Ian and Talkman and my hitting coaches and whoever it was that I spoke to and whoever added to my, you know, expanding knowledge of big league baseball. Because I think when I came up here, you know, I was a different player. I was a different person. And definitely just feels nice to feel like I know the ropes a little bit better the second time around.
I'm glad that you mentioned Mike Talkman, you know, the saying that he's one of the guys that you've worked with. Because I've always said, like, if I had a child, I would say Mike Talkman is the guy that should teach you baseball. It just seems like his, number one, his approach at the plate, where it's always like a 2-2 count or full count. And then the fact that I think maybe all of his home runs have been opposite field. He's just a steady presence in the outfield as well. Has Talkman been the most important guy to you in terms of a teammate?
I mean, I don't think most important is the right way to word it. I think, I don't think it's a game of most or least. I think it's all about who, you know, and if we're going to talk about who, Talk's a great guy to kind of watch. And, you know, I got a little bit of Talk and a little bit of Cody back-to-back spring trainings now, and those are two kind of different personalities and whatnot, but both guys who really know the game and know how to play the game of baseball and produce for their team, clearly, because, you know, those are two guys, two of the best bats I've been around, and you know, it doesn't even need to be verbal. It's been nice hitting ninth because I get to watch really good left-handed hitters hit in front of me. So not about most important. I haven't quite thought of it like that at all. And I would just say that whatever I can take from anybody, man, that's about as simple as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, that's important, and I think the veterans appreciate that as well, because, you know, you can learn a lot from your manager and your hitting coaches and position coaches and all that, but invaluable from some of those veterans. I think one of my favorite games that I watched you play this year was last Wednesday in Atlanta. That was an important win, too, because you guys had lost the first two games in Atlanta. Obviously, the Braves are excellent. You win that game 7-1, but that's the game where you had the triple. I think you were hit by a pitch with the bases loaded, and the one highlight that didn't, I don't think we played it coming in, but it was that push bunt RBI that you, I think it was in that game. Correct me if I'm wrong, but was that all you? Was that just like, what made you decide to do that? What were the circumstances that you said, you know what, I'm going to bunt this thing for a base hit and not get a run?
You know, that's all situational. That's all circumstantial. So I just kind of read the field and, you know, the bunt aspect of my game is something that's been needing some work, and I haven't been quite successful with it this year, or as successful as I'd want to be. And I was just happy to get that one down and be able to execute. But you know, I think it's important to take advantage of the bunt game with runners in scoring position, and you know, doesn't really matter the outs. I think if the game gives you the freedom to bunt, you need to take it, especially if you can run. And I mean, it, you know, left on left, it's nice because the field opens up, or the right side opens up a little bit more. And I was just able to place one nicely. And, it was nice to drive in a run doing that as well. That was just a good feeling again, to be able to execute, situationally.
What's a better feeling, that or flying around the bases in that triple you had where we all got to see the full Pete Crow Armstrong speed on display?
No, the push bunt for sure. You know, running the third base is tiring sometimes, but no, I mean, yeah, I'd have to say that push bunt. You know, I think also, you know, the getting to third base was important there. So I mean, I think turning the double into the triple was probably the most rewarding thing of that, just because, you know, Jan executed perfectly and drove me in right after that. So I think we might have let a run up in the half inning before that, and getting that run back was definitely nice in the later innings. But I think generally, being able to take one with you against the lefties is fun. Yeah.
Talking to Pete Crow Armstrong, I'm Mark Grody here on Hit and Run, filling in for Matt Spiegel today. In the Friday game against, that was the Paul Skeens game, the rookie who ended up striking out 11. You were, for a moment there, you're kind of a mini hero, because there was seven straight strikeouts before you finally made contact in that game. What were you guys seeing from Skeens, and what were your impressions of him for the second time now? We have to ask you this question.
Well, you know, Paul Skeens is a baseball specimen, physical specimen. The big boy throws a heavy ball and was doing a really good job of locating and mixing and you know, showing us a bit better of a version of him, of himself, than I think we got the first time. I think he'd probably tell you the same thing. You know, I think he probably had some nerves in his first outing, and it being his debut and it being at home. But you know, I think he was just that much better yesterday than he was last time. And yeah, we were just seeing A stuff from Paul Skeens. So, you know, as tough it is to face sometimes, you can kind of look back at it now and appreciate the, you know. I love baseball, and I think I can appreciate how cool that was to be able to compete against him, because, you know, that's what we all signed up for. You know, it's funny that you know, 97 is becoming the norm now, but again, that's what I go to sleep wanting to do and waking up wanting to do. And yeah, you know, him specifically, I've gotten to kind of follow his progress since we were 12, and I told him he's definitely a little bit bigger than he was back then, but I'm you know, I think all in all, now that I don't have to face him for a little bit, I'll give him the credit in saying that he was real good. So that we definitely tip our cap to that, but we're looking forward to facing him another time, you know.
Oh, yeah, you guys are gonna get...
I'm sure there will be many
opportunities to get to Paul Skeens. Hopefully that will be the case for everybody involved. Last couple things here, man, because I know you got to get going, but how would you assess your outfield? I know in that game you had that. I was like, man, this guy's got a strong arm, but it did go over the catcher's head at one point that allowed a run, but we've seen many spectacular plays too in the outfield. How do you assess your defensive play so far this year?
You know, I think it's been a small sample size. I think our pitchers have been really good, and I haven't actually gotten all that much action out there.
It's a good thing, right?
I think that's the most ideal situation ever. You know, I think when you got guys that we got on the mound, and you go out there, you know, kind of hoping they just feel comfortable enough to do what they need to do on the mound, and whatever that means to them. And if that results in us having to make plays, that's what we're here to do, and that's what I'm here to do. I live for that shit. So, you know, I'm, as much as I want to go run and chase balls down, I also have I have to be okay with Javi Assad going six shutty and Shota going seven shutty and
yeah,
whatever.
Like,
it's honestly very fun for me to watch from the center field angle too. But No, I mean, I've made some plays I haven't, and you know that throw the other day was definitely frustrating, and that's one I got to live with, but it's one that I'm going to fix, and you know, I think again, small sample size, but it'll only get better, and I'm sure it'll only be worse sometimes because that's just baseball, but I'm going and looking to make plays regardless.
Do you have fun with the fans at Wrigley Field in those bleachers when you go out there?
Absolutely. I love saying hi to everybody when we get to go out for the first inning, and I love hearing a little chatter behind me and whatnot and interacting a little bit, but it's funny who you'll run into in the bleachers. So, our bleacher friends back there have been great to me so far.
Pete, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck today against the Pirates, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you much. Sounds good.
Absolutely. That's Pete Crow Armstrong, Cubs outfielder, former top prospect, and yeah, he's figuring it all out, man. You could see the tools on display. Like I talked about that game last week. He is imperfect, but that's what it's all about. He is a rookie and a very promising one at that. Still to come on Hit and Run, we'll go live to Wrigley Field and bring in Matt Spiegel at 11:25, Paul Sullivan at noon. I'm Mark Grody in for Spiegel on Hit and Run on the Score.
Hit and Run with Mark Grody on 670 the Score.
Hope you guys are doing great. Welcome back into Hit and Run on the Score. I'm Mark Grody. Top text, 229. Where's Speegs? Speegs? Speegs will be on Hit and Run just a little bit later on. He's out of Wrigley Field. I assume he's probably interviewing a player right now to be aired on the pregame show at 12:45. And then Speegs will be doing some play-by-play in the fifth inning. But he will give us a scene setter coming up at 11:25 from the friendly confines of the north side of our fine city. Sean Sears, bring me Ben in Queen. Is that where he's from?
Queens, New York.
Oh, he's from Queens. I just
Queens,
see...
New York City, Grody.
Oh, Benny,
how's
boy,
it going?
I'm very sorry about that. I didn't know. I just saw Queen. That's the way he put it down there.
Forget about it. Hey, listen.
Sorry. Yes, yes.
I saw the PCA right here in Queens in Citi Field. You know, Citi Field, the center field goes out to 408, covers a lot of ground. He is a Excelsior outfielder, and he made a bunch of plays. If you went back and listened to the Mets broadcast, I went to see the first three games, and they were really well-pitched games. If you remember, that was the no-no with Seve against Tyone, who was pitching great, and then Assad did great, and then Alzolay did bad, and then the Shota game. But anyway, he's already got three outs above average. He doesn't even qualify. If he qualified, he'd be in the 90th percentile of outfielders. On the other hand, dovetailing with what Bob in Arlington Heights said about sunken costs in your corner outfielder, Ian Happ. I'm sick of people calling him a gold glover. I know he won two gold gloves. The second one he won on reputation only. Last year he was 84 and 92 at minus seven outs above average. He made 0 of 23 five-star plays. This year he is 81 of 104 outfielders. A couple of weeks ago he was 101 out of 104. Okay, he's made one five-star play, no four-star plays, one three-star plays. This guy is blocking PCA, Canario, Casey with his no trade clause. Ian Happ's contract looks worse every day. And from the right hand, right-handed this year, he's got a 72 weighted runs created plus with an OBP of 270. He doesn't get on base as a right-handed hitter. Canario's only got one minor league option left. If he has to come up for some bereavement leave or somebody gets sick or something like that, and then they're wondering what they have to do, and he gets crunched because Ian Happ's sunken cost are coming down in the team, there's going to be a problem. Other than that, take the Cubs. I took them at plus 185. They're going to win. They're the best team in the division. Shota Imanaga is not only a Cy Young candidate, But if he keeps like this, he's an MVP candidate. He's like what Kershaw in 2014.
I got you, Ben. Hey, Ben, I'm sorry. I'm right. It's almost the top of the hour, so I got to let you go. But I do appreciate the call from Queens, and I saw that game too. Hey, one thing you can say, I kind of agree with you on Hap. Like, I didn't see spectacular outfield play last year. He's been steady. I was a little surprised he did get the gold glove. But, hey, that's a win if you're getting it on reputation. That means that Ian Happ has built up some credibility in Major League Baseball, and I get what you are saying. He is struggling in all sorts of different ways right now. So, and trust me, you know, this is a year in which the Cubs are expected to win. The division is there for the taking. So once you get through May and into June and then July when things are real, if these guys are not performing, they will not be playing. I'm Mark Grody, in for Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse wreck pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.